established this need to increase our understanding of native freshwater fish in the Chehalis River Basin. We knew, there was limited information available to support the questions we were being asked. And so ultimately we needed to investigate a large range of information to support native freshwater fish research. And that included some fundamental understanding of species distribution, their habitat preferences, their movement patterns, as well as bigger scale things like occupancy or fish density as well. And so this information we wanted to use to establish survey methods, establish the baseline for occupancy or density, and then that would be for monitoring efforts moving forward. And so this is in terms of restoration. And so the question really is, from a native freshwater fish perspective, how will restoration targeting salmon and steelhead influence other native fish species in the Chehalis River? And so the large majority, or the modeling that we're doing in order to look at restoration, is largely focused around salmon and steelhead, simply because we have a lot more data to support that. And so we wanted to understand how this restoration may affect other native freshwater fishes in the basin. So overall, the take home here was we really needed to increase our understanding of these fishes. So diving right in, I'm gonna talk about four studies today, and some of them have been completed and some of them are ongoing. And then also some of them were designed in order to look at potential impacts from the proposed dam, but I'm gonna talk about them today in the context of restoration and how they inform those questions about restoration within the basin. And so starting off, the Upper Chehalis in-stream fish study. This was designed to look at distribution of fish present within the Upper Chehalis main stem as well as select tributaries. And so we surveyed 30 river kilometers of main stem and tributary habitat. And we did this back in 2015. And this is a photo of a snorkel survey in Thrash Creek in the Upper Chehalis. And I'm just going to briefly cover it today. There is a report available on our agency website that talks about this in more detail. And so this is our survey frame, and this is upstream of PL, so we're focusing in the Upper Chehalis. Again, this overlays with that proposed inundation footprint. We surveyed the darker black lines. Those were our survey reaches, and the flows moving from south to north. And so what we saw, similar to what we heard from John's talk, we saw majority of pool river habitat in the main stem. We also saw with a gravel cobble substrate. We also saw boulders and bedrocks, the substrate dominant areas as well. And then as we moved into the tributaries, we saw higher gradient habitats, step pools. We saw more shading or canopy cover, and we also saw a lot more large woody debris influence. And so looking at the species that we identified, thinking about species distribution, we found two different species of dace, long-nosed dace and speckled dace. We saw red-sided shiners, large-scale suckers, this is the juvenile large-scale sucker there, as well as Pacific lamprey, and these are juvenile Pacific lamprey amacetes seen in the photo. And we also saw that these were occupying reaches more downstream compared to upstream, similar to that gradient idea. And we also found two species of sculpin, reticulate sculpin and torrent sculpin. And sculpin are notoriously difficult to ID, but we did confirm this using genetic analyses. So these are our Upper Chehalis sculpin. So overall, we saw 14 fish species. And the understanding of what fish are present informs the fundamental question of if restoration would impact those species. So getting that fundamental what's there, what species make up that area, and understanding more of their distribution. And so next step, I'm going to talk about the validation of habitat preferences. This is a speckled dace. So initially we utilized habitat preferences not specific to the Chehalis. So similar to a lot of the initial work going on in the Chehalis, we were using data and information from outside of the basin to try and answer some of our initial questions. So we identified this need to validate and inform additional habitat preferences specific to data in the Chehalis. And again, a report's available. I'm going to talk about this and just give an example, but there is an agency report available online. So the species we looked at for this study were large-scale sucker, speckled dace, Pacific lamprey, and mountain whitefish. And this is a Pacific lamprey on the left at the bottom, a spawning speckled dace in the middle, all colored up and looking cute, and then a large-scale sucker on the right, again, our juvenile large-scale sucker there. We did this in the spring and summer of 2016, and this is a survey area, so that's the Chehalis we're all familiar with, and we looked at several sub-basins to get this information, and then also in the Willapa River, simply because of the number of Pacific lamprey that were spawning in that area. And so with this data, we constructed life stage specific habitat suitability criteria, and these were used to describe depth, velocity, and substrate preferences. And then we fitted this data with a generalized additive model. So I'm going to go through an example with Pacific lamprey, looking at their preferences for spawning and rearing for depth and velocity. And so depth is measured in feet, and velocity is measured in feet per second, and those are on the x-axis, and spawning is the top two figures, and rearing is the bottom two figures. So what we found was, for spawning, a preference of about 1 foot and a velocity of about 1 to 2 feet per second. And then for rearing, a broader depth preference at 2 to 3 feet and a velocity preference for rearing where it drops off really quickly as you start to have increased flows. And so for reference, these are the original curves for Pacific lamprey, which were established from data collected outside the basin. And so you can see how our additional data that we've collected specific to the Chehalis, how it compares to what we were originally thinking. So we see a more narrow depth preference and velocity preference for spawning, and a more broad preference for depth when in terms of rearing. And so these are these can be used with PHABSAM, or physical habitat simulation modeling. And it is a decision support tool, a method to compare index of habitat quality and quantity based on the flow for a species, and in this case, species that we know relatively little about. And this output, this weighted usable area output, these comparisons allow us to help with management decisions. And so we can evaluate impacts associated with flow changes using these two tools together to look at things from flow changes from restoration scenarios, or also from climate change, which we know is going to impact the flows within the Chehalis River. So an example of that, if we think about adding a restoration action, we think about adding large woody debris to a stream to increase the habitat complexity, increase our diversity of flows that we have present, it could benefit both spawning and rearing lamprey. And we see that disparate preference for velocity in terms of spawning and rearing, which is very true for lamprey, very notable for lamprey. And so the idea of restoring and increasing our diversity of flows would benefit lamprey holistically. So next up, moving right along, I'm going to talk about the movement and home range study. This is a spawning Pacific lamprey digging a rid. So the objectives for this study, and this study is ongoing. So the objectives for this study were to describe movement and home ranges of mountain whitefish, describe the pre-spawning movements of Pacific lamprey, and then identify and describe the relationship between these fish movements to flow and temperature. And so there is an interim report available, so if you want to look at this in more detail, we have an interim report that talks about the work we have done up until May of this year. So Pacific lamprey and mountain whitefish. This is a mountain whitefish on the left here. He's in a Photarium on the bank, looking great. And then our Pacific lamprey, this is a spawning Pacific lamprey again. And so these are both freshwater fishes present in the Chehalis. Mountain whitefish are a game fish. They're entirely freshwater. They're long-lived. They can be an indicator species. Pacific lamprey, cultural, historic significance. They have a unique life history as well, and there have been population declines seen throughout their range over the past couple decades. So the methods that we're using for this study are using radio telemetry. So we're installing, or implanting rather, radio telemetry tags in mountain whitefish and Pacific lamprey. And then we're tracking their movements using fixed telemetry receivers as well as mobile tracking. And so this is this gives us two scales of movement patterns, really. The fixed telemetry receivers we have installed, so we're constantly looking at their movement patterns. It's a broader scale of movement. And then the mobile tracking is a more fine scale movement. We can go find the fish more specifically. And then ultimately we want to compare those movements to flow and temperature. So here is an example of mobile tracking. using a three-element Yagi antenna, and then also implanting a radio telemetry tag into a Pacific lamprey there on the bottom. So here's our survey frame for the movement and home range study, and we're focusing in the New Ockham River. And you can see the locations of our temperature loggers. Those are the green triangles. And the fixed receivers, where we've installed fixed receivers, are the red circles. And then this is not the most current information, but from our interim report up until May of this year, these are tagging locations for mountain whitefish from our 2017 effort along the South Fork New Ockham there. So now I'm going to touch on the preliminary findings that we have from this study. As I said, it is ongoing. And again, our mountain whitefish there. So the preliminary findings, all of our tagged fish remained within the study area. So when we think about the scale of restoration, if we're whether or not it would impact mountain whitefish, there, what we found is that mountain whitefish were remaining wholly within that study area, and so potentially populations within the Chehalis. When we think about restoration of an area, that would focus on, we would be looking at localized impacts on those mountain whitefish as opposed to on the broader basin-wide scale. And then the range of migrations varied. We had some fish that moved a lot within a small range versus a larger range. But whitefish can move into those areas targeted for restoration. They have the ability and they will do that. They're moving throughout the season. We also saw winter movements into tributaries, which was an exciting find. And so just for reference, Lost Creek and Kearney Creek here are shown on the bottom of the map. And what we found was whitefish, tagged whitefish, moved into these tributaries. So Kearney Creek is a fourth order stream. It's a relatively large stream. But Lost Creek's a third order stream. It's a smaller stream, not thought to support mountain whitefish in the past. And so now we're increasing our understanding of their distribution and also highlighting that the complex movements that people have shown in other basins of mountain whitefish movements. And it also talks about that connectivity and the need for connectivity. We think about longitudinal connectivity within the river. They're moving around to access spawning locations as well as overwintering areas and summer areas. But whitefish could also potentially benefit from barrier removals when we think about them moving into those tributaries and using that habitat as well. And then for lamprey, we saw upstream and downstream pre-spawning migration so far. And so again, thinking about connectivity, access to spawning areas from holding locations. So Pacific lamprey rather come in, they have, thinking about spring Chinook, they come in and then they overwinter. They're coming into fresh water, they're overwintering, then they're spawning in the following spring. And so connectivity between those spawning areas as well as their holding locations would be important to consider as well in terms of restoration. And so the next steps, we're going to continue to tag and track and then ultimately compile that data and compare it to flow and temperature data that we are collecting, or the USGS is collecting for flows. So if movement is based on flow or temperature, it will emphasize that need for habitat complexity, getting those differences in flow, and also shading for temperature, thinking about temperature. So just tying it into habitat restoration. So lastly, I'm going to talk about another ongoing study, a native fish density study. So this is our first year of it. This is a pilot effort looking at the feasibility of investigating the density of juvenile Pacific lamprey. And so we started the field work in the summer of this year. We're continuing on right now. And so the objectives for this study are to estimate density to help with future monitoring efforts. And so, as I mentioned in the first slide, thinking about establishment of a baseline to compare with future monitoring efforts. And then also estimating density per meter or habitat area. An additional objective would be to develop a predictive model of juvenile Pacific lamprey density based on habitat and landscape attributes. So this ties into looking at the probability of a juvenile lamprey occupying or using an area, depending on how we would change it with restoration actions or access to that area with barrier removal, for example. And so just a quick summary. We started out wanting to increase our understanding of native freshwater fishes in the basin, and we've started to do that to understand the composition of species, to confirm what we thought, what species are present that aren't salmon and steelhead, which we know relatively more about. Looking at their distribution, understanding where they are within the basin, and then more fine-tuned, looking at their habitat preferences, trying to understand why they're there, what preferences they have for their depth, velocity, and substrate within certain areas, and then their movements. We know fish need to move in order to complete their life history. We know access to spawning, overwintering, all of those things are required, and so we're starting to understand that a lot more. And then ultimately, bigger picture, we want to start looking at occupancy and density on a bigger scale. And that final question of how will restoration targeting salmon and steelhead influence other native fish species in the Chehalis? Well, we learned, for example, and I'm just giving a couple examples here, so the removing of barriers could potentially benefit for mountain whitefish as well. And if we're targeting areas for restoration, would we expect lamprey to use it for overwintering, for example, when we think about the results also of the movement study? And so these are some of the questions we can start to answer with the research that we have ongoing and some of the reporting that we've done so far. So I just want to conclude with acknowledging all of the many people who have contributed towards making these studies a success. This was multiple years of effort, as well as the water science team, Ecology Water Resources Program, spawning survey crews, and access and funding as well. Thank you. Yes?
I think you covered it, that you were focusing on some other things. I was curious if you looked at their presence and their life history stage, et cetera, in the context of the substrate.
With lamprey?
Any of them.
With any of them. Yes, so we covered substrate, and all of those, the substrate results are available in the report.
Okay.
And so, for example, lamprey, which I didn't talk about, but they were highly specialized, rearing preference for finer substrate. So sand, silt, and organic debris.
The reason I was curious is that I'm assuming if we use log structures, we will change the substrate in some of those areas to a finer substrate than what's there now. So that's kind of what I was thinking of.
Yeah. And I think that, so the increased habitat complexity, thinking about the diversity requirements for multiple species overlapping, they're occupying the same areas, but they have different habitat requirements. So that increased habitat complexity is just overarching benefits multiple species. Diversity of flow, diversity of habitats supports multiple species. Anything else?
Thanks, Marie.
Thanks.